Hey, advocates. It's time for another episode of The Big Voice. I'm Rachelle Smith, your host, as always. Hope you're doing well. I'm sorry for the break, but after creating a deep dive episode on Operation Foul's Anchor, I really had to practice some self-care. It was actually pretty emotionally taxing, and I thought, yep, I need a moment. And to top all that off, I just went through a breakup. So sometimes you just got to take a moment to recharge. And I encourage you all to do the same. Self-care is so crucial, especially dealing with heavy topics or, you know, just dealing with regular life. So take that moment just from me to you. And now we're going to dive into some news stories from June 30th to June 7th. The story is about Major General Philip Stewart, who was the commander of the 19th Air Force, and he was the one that faced the court-martial for charges including sexual assault, conduct unbecoming of an officer, and dereliction of duty. So these charges had stemmed from a TDY trip where he had a sexual encounter with a subordinate, and she was a lieutenant colonel. She testified that she felt trapped and unable to refuse his advances. So the court found him guilty of conduct unbecoming of an officer and dereliction of duty, but he was acquitted for sexual assault. The verdict largely hinged on an interpretation of consent, with the panel of generals concluding that Stewart believed he had obtained it, despite the lieutenant colonel's testimony indicating otherwise. So I mean, I'm sure you saw in a lot of my posts, I was pretty impressed that his request to retire was denied by the Secretary of the Air Force and he was sent to court-martial, because it seemed like it was going to be a rare commitment to accountability. But letting him off for sexual assault is a travesty, in my opinion, because we're constantly taught that consent can't be given if someone is either under the influence or too afraid to say no. Now, knowing what service members know about the military justice system, it's clear that someone outranked by their assailant can't truly consent, especially outranked like that. That's coercion, which is defined as making someone feel as if they can't say no. And as someone who's felt too scared to say stop because I was afraid that my assailant would kill me, like, this ruling really makes me want to just vomit. I have nothing but sympathy and empathy for this lieutenant colonel, because she deserved better from the military justice system, like so many of us before did, and obviously now so many more will after. So this ruling is setting a dangerous precedent. It's discouraging other survivors from coming forward, and it even shows that those in power can and will escape accountability. So they're perpetuating that culture of silence and fear by doing stuff like this. As a survivor of multiple assaults starting from childhood, one way I learned to cope was to freeze and not say anything or not do anything. So this highlights the need for systemic change in how we handle our understanding of consent versus coercion. We need to protect service members and ensure that justice is served regardless of their rank or position. And the failure to address such issues contributes to declining recruitment numbers, as potential recruits are seeing that there is no accountability and justice is kind of a joke within our system. And I got my little handy dandy tablet out to read this definition of what consent is not, or examples of situations where there is no consent. And this is from the University of California, Riverside, from their CARE program, which is their campus advocacy and resources and education program. So here are examples where there is no consent. Verbal non-consent is no, stop, I don't want to. They go on to highlight, remember, the absence of a verbal no is not the same as a yes. Now, this is something where leaders, just up until a few years ago, actually have used that defense of, well, they didn't say no. How was the person supposed to know? And it was only recently changed, but in the UCMJ. But that was an argument of, well, silence is consent. That line of thinking makes my blood run cold. Body language can also be used as to communicate a lack of consent. Here are some nonverbal signals that you need to stop and check in. Silence, saying nothing. Turning their head or body away from you. Pushing you away. Lying still and not participating. Avoiding touch or not touching you. This is the kicker, though. This is important. Consent also cannot be obtained by coercion or force or by taking advantage of someone who is incapacitated. Using threats or manipulation to get someone to say yes isn't consent. Consent must be freely given, which means that a person is choosing to say yes when they are also free to say no. If someone feels like they have to say yes because saying no would result in harm or negative consequences, that's not freely given consent. So, sure, you can hear the consternation in my voice, but that shit pisses me off. And there was a case at the Air Force Academy, actually, last summer. The female cadet was very, very drunk and did not remember any of her encounter. And she was beside herself, and the male cadet was let off. But not a story for another time. The second story is about how two service members were charged with sexual assault in Okinawa. So in Okinawa, two American military members, one a U.S. airman and the other one being a Marine, were charged with sexual assaults in separate incidents within a 5-month span. So the airman was indicted for allegedly kidnapping and sexually assaulting a 16-year-old girl on Christmas Eve, while the Marine was charged with non-consensual sex resulting in injury in May. So these incidents have sparked protests from the Japanese government and the local population, who have accused the U.S. military of trying to hide these crimes. Japanese officials have called for improved military discipline and measures to prevent such incidents, highlighting the ongoing tensions and strategic challenges posed by the American military presence in Okinawa. It's just infuriating to see that these are reoccurring incidents, and that lack of accountability and transparency is exacerbating tensions with our host nations, and it's putting more people at risk. And it's disheartening to witness these same patterns of misconducts and cover-ups over and over and over again. And I'm heartbroken for these victims and the community affected by these heinous acts, because this has been going on for such a long time, yet it is a reminder of how much work we still have ahead of us to ensure safety and justice for everyone. So these cases are showing the cracks in our military justice system, and even the impact that it's having on international relations. Like, is protecting service members from the consequences of harming people that they're guests in their nation? That's more important than actually being good guests to a host. The people that commit these things, they're betraying not only the trust of betraying their duty, but they're betraying the trust that is put in them to go to these places. That's wild to me. So I have a brief history lesson on that. I know I keep pulling out my little tablet, but what's interesting to me is that, like, in response to these incidents, these most recent ones, this brigadier general that's over there, he's a wing commander at Kadena, which is where Okinawa is, but he was saying he did the not all men defense. So the crime allegation, quote, does not reflect most of the U.S. service members that work for the Japan-U.S. alliance. If you've been keeping track of the number of sexual assaults and court martials and number of people coming forward, this quite clearly reflects most U.S. service members, whether they want to admit it or not. Like, let me give you a rundown on things that happened in Okinawa. So in 1995, three U.S. servicemen kidnapped and raped a 12-year-old girl. In 2016, there were two high-profile incidents. The first, a U.S. Navy seaman assigned to the Marine Corps Camp Schwab raped a Japanese woman at a hotel in Naha. The second, a civilian that was a former Marine was working at Kadena, and he raped and murdered a 20-year-old Japanese woman who'd gone out for a walk. And it's, well, that guy, he was sentenced to life imprisonment with hard labor in 2017. But I mean, that's still not going to bring that young woman back. And then this goes back to 1955, where there was a 6-year-old girl that was raped and murdered by an American soldier. And the Okinawa Times, which is a local news source there, attributed the crime to the violent structure, that's a quote from them, of the military, and lamented that the reality that one cannot safely go for a walk in a private community, even 72 years after the Battle of Okinawa. And the founder of the Okinawan Women Against Military Violence notes that statistics show about 120 rapes committed by U.S. military personnel in Okinawa since 1972, but since most are not reported, that it's just the tip of the icebergs. That is the legacy that our military is leaving around the world. Do with that information that you will, but to me, how can you be proud of a military that does stuff like that? Sartho's story is about the court-martial that is going on right now, where the doctor had about 52 charges against him. 15 current or retired Joint Base Lewis-McChord service members are seeking $5 million each in damages because they claim that the Army failed to protect them from Major Michael Stockin, a military doctor that was charged with sexual abuse. He faces 52 charges involving abusive sexual contact with 41 victims while working at Madigan Army Medical Center, which is at Joint Base Lewis-McChord in Washington State. The servicemen allege that the Army was negligent in hiring and then supervising and continuing to retain Stockin, and that abuse caused them severe emotional distress. And despite reporting Stockin's behavior, no action was initially taken, and he continued to see and allegedly abuse patients. This case is being described as one of the largest sexual abuse scandals in recent military history, raising some pretty serious questions about the Army's ability to protect its service members from internal threats. Just, to me, this case is beyond appalling. It's negligent. The Army's been negligent in hiring and continuing to supervise him doing these things. That, to me, is unforgivable as a survivor. Like, I understand the lasting trauma and betrayal felt by these servicemen because this system failed them completely. They trusted the medical system to provide health care, and instead, they were violated in the worst possible way. And I'm angry for them that such negligence was allowed to continue, and this predator was allowed to harm so many. Like, these men that deserved protection and respect, not what they endured. No one deserves that. And to me, this case is setting a precedent for, again, accountability within the military medical system. Like, the amount of victims points to huge failures in protecting patients. There needs to be rigorous oversight and swift action to prevent future abuses, because no one else needs to suffer from something like this. We have to advocate for the rights and safety of service members, ensuring that those in positions of trust, like doctors, are held to the highest standards of conduct. I want more than anything for stronger reforms and protections within all of the services, because this failure is not only undermining trust in the military medical system, it's undermining trust in the military itself. And I can only imagine what these men are going through when when they've had to testify or try to share their stories, because this whole added layer of stigma toward male sexual abuse survivors is, I don't have words for how heartbreaking and how much pain these men are in. And that's something I like to remind people, is that MST can be committed by anyone, and anyone can be a victim of it. It doesn't matter your age, your rank, your race, your gender. It could happen to you. And even with these past few stories, there's obviously this pattern of, oh, we'll just look the other way. This needs to stop. Okay, so I had to take a sip of water because this next story just, oof. Basically, it is a Navy sailor who was accused of murdering a woman in Texas while he was out on bond for a sexual assault that was described as torturous. Okay. So Julian Jefferson, a U.S. Navy sailor, faces capital murder charges for allegedly killing Denise Lissette Ramos in Texas while he was out on bond for a previous sexual assault conviction. Jefferson had previously pled guilty to a torture-like sexual assault of a fellow service member in California. And his release on bond and subsequent alleged murder have raised significant concerns about the military justice system's handling of violent offenders. Imagine that. The incident shocked the Fairfield community and brought renewed attention to the issue of violence against women, highlighting the urgent need for greater accountability. Look, it's that word again, within the military justice system. It was hard to read this one. This case was disturbing. A friend had sent it to me on LinkedIn, and just the subsequent murder shows that, like, the military is not really giving a shit about people. It's terrifying to think that somebody that was convicted of torturing someone was allowed to just roam free afterward. And my heart breaks for Denise Ramos and her family, because this system, which has failed so many, failed her. And these are real and present dangers posed by inadequate supervision and leniency towards violent offenders and even not so violent offenders. But it's just showing the urgent need. I keep beating this horse, but urgent need for stricter policies within the military, because the failure to keep someone like Jefferson detained allowed for further violence, which shows the consequence of leniency and inadequate supervision, like the rapes that happened in Okinawa. So we have to change. We have to protect service members, and now we have to protect civilians from service members. The loss of Denise's life shows the need that we have to change. We have to hold those people who pose a threat to other service members and civilians are detained, and they are dealt with and held accountable for their actions. If not only to be doing the right thing, but to also protect people and protect the lives. These people are never going to get their daughter back, and they let someone on the loose who clearly has no regard for human life. Like, I just don't have words for that. Of, oh yeah, this guy seems fine. I can't. Okay, and this one will be our final story, and it is about a pretty well-known rapper. Rapper T.I. and his wife Tiny are actually seeking dismissal of a sexual assault lawsuit filed by an Air Force veteran who's going by Jane Doe, alleging that they drugged and raped her back in 2005. And T.I. and Tiny are arguing that this lawsuit is invalid due to the statute of limitations and the lack of evidence of a concerted cover-up. So the plaintiff, Jane Doe, claims that Tiny pinned her down while T.I. assaulted her. And the case raises some important issues about the long-term impact of sexual assault and the challenges that survivors face in seeking justice after an event like this. It's heart-wrenching. Jane Doe's allegations are serious, and I think they deserve to be heard. As a survivor, I can empathize deeply with her struggle for justice and want to acknowledge the immense courage that it takes to come forward with something like that after so many years. We had a guest in our first season who shared a story with us that it took over 30 years and she had never told anyone, but she shared it on our show. And we have to understand that an event like a sexual assault or rape, it's not something that just goes away. You are fundamentally changed as a person, which has been said in a number of episodes that we've had of guest interviews. It's almost like, and I've said this before myself, it's like the person that you were before that happened has died. And there's this new you, your life has just branched off in a completely different way. So to say that this woman's claims are invalid because it happened long ago, every time she is triggered, she relives that moment. She is in it. Every time a T.I. song comes on, whatever you like, or whichever one it might be, she's back in that moment. Anytime she sees him in a TV commercial or a TV show or one of his kids, back in that moment. It is current in her mind because of what trauma does to a person. That being said, it's infuriating to see powerful people like him try to dismiss her very real experience on technicalities rather than addressing that they hurt her. And her bravery in speaking out against influential people is so commendable, and I think she deserves our support and understanding. This has to be terrifying. And this lawsuit, again, is highlighting the challenges that survivors face while they're trying to seek justice, especially when powerful people that are rappers and well-connected are involved. And to me, it raises questions about statutes of limitations and the need for reforms, because, again, she is living that moment daily. We need to hold perpetrators accountable regardless of how much time has passed because of that. We have to advocate for changes. We have to protect survivors and ensure their voices are heard. It's so important to support and believe these people and continue to fight for a justice system that truly serves everyone. Even if you have done so much personal work and you've found your great coping skills that are reliable, you've identified all your triggers, and you've reached a state of post-traumatic growth. You still have to work at it every day. It's not that, oh, I'm cured now. It's not like when you break your leg and after the cast comes off after how long and your leg's good to go. Brains don't quite work like that. Emotions don't quite work like that. So she has to work every day, wherever she is in her healing journey, to move past something like this and to keep enriching herself and growing. And that's all the more reason to hold someone accountable for me. Look, there it is, the A word again. It's been in every single story. So that's going to wrap it up for the Big Voice for this past week. Our next episode is coming out on Wednesday. We're featuring floating. It's really cool. Our guest is the owner of a float spa, one that I actually used to work at in Destin. His name's Michael. Spa is called Float Brothers Float Spa. And it is a really cool method of alternative care. Some people don't really, you know, benefit from talk therapy. Other people really, really take to art therapy or dance therapy. And then there are people that benefit from floating. So I can't wait to share all that information with you. He has a great nonprofit he also started to get veterans, and active duty members, actually, that have PTSD, whether it's from MST, deployment, or any sort of traumatic circumstance in their career, he has a program for them. And I think that's amazing. So we'll see you next week. Remember that we have our Facebook group. Please join. We'd love for you to subscribe and share this episode. And also, don't forget to leave a like. I'm still learning this YouTube stuff. And yeah, if you could leave a review on the show, wherever you're listening to it, that would be wonderful. There's a lot of great new things coming your way. And we also have a challenge coming up. So you just gotta stay tuned. We'll see you in the next episode.
Remember, our voices are weapons in the fight against MST. Stay connected, share your story, and join our fight to end military sexual trauma for good. Until next time, thanks for listening to the Silence Voices of MST.